we're back. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Welcome to it. 9:16 here on a Friday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer after 10 o'clock. Steve Lloyd, Graham Creech, and Steve Bunda will take over with In the Box. The drive this afternoon, Lee, A.J., Matty Vowles. Kenny Walls will be on the call tonight at 7 with Ottawa 67's hockey. They're taking on the Oshawa Generals tonight at TD Place Arena, a team they just beat on Monday afternoon, 7-3. So I see one guy licking his chops to play in the game tonight is Jack Mateer, right? Had 2 goals and 5 points and signed his first pro contract on Monday. So he's looking forward to a visit from the general. So that goes tonight at 7, and that immediately follows She's Got Game. Michaela Schreider and Robin Flynn will take you through everything women's sports tonight between 6 and 7 here on TSN 1200. Don't forget, tomorrow the Red Blacks are playing an afternoon game at 4 o'clock. At TD Place. I just looked at the hourly forecast because I know we've been talking all morning about heavy rain tonight into the day tomorrow. Looks like the heaviest of the rain should be over by 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Should taper off to more showers.
Heavy early?
Heavy early. Is your now former, is he now your fired St. Louis source? We don't need him anymore now that Kachuk has signed? Heavy early or what?
Pretty much not much to give at this point, eh? Send him his final invoice out of your account and we're good to go.
But the rain should taper off. So late afternoonish, if you're thinking about the football game, should be better. And then the Red Blacks in Montreal. So, by the way, that game will be heard on 580 CFRA because we will have the Sens and the Leafs return game coming up tomorrow night from Toronto. 5 o'clock pregame, 7 o'clock will be the face-off. You and Creature will have the call on that one, Simmer, the pregame show at least, as the Sens will try to go back-to-back. And wouldn't that be, we talked about what a great day it was yesterday for Sens fans with Kachuk signing, season beginning, fans in the stands, they win the game. If they could ever find a way to go 2-for-2 against the Leafs.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Without Kachuk.
Yeah, without Kachuk, what do you do in goal? How do you approach it? And wouldn't want to say house money, but for all the positivity, a lot of work to be done. An assumption is the Maple Leafs will be even better, and is Matthews some point next week. But you're right. I mean, it just is kind of everything that you needed yesterday. And Brady Kachuk coming, nice to get that first victory. They've talked about trying to get off to a better start, and I think all the energy that was built up in yesterday went a long ways to securing that, along with some great goaltending.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you are an advocate, and I put the question to Dave Poulin. You are I'd roll right back with Forsberg tomorrow night based on his performance last night and let Matt Murray play the Sunday game against Dallas. Yeah. I just think that, and I totally get your thinking, and maybe this is the old school way that hockey has always been for a million years of you don't, and I'm not saying that having whatever it is that Matt Murray's dealing with, a virus, a cold, flu, whatever it is, but you don't lose your place because of injury. I just wonder if I think they're going to play Matt Murray if he's healthy.
Yeah.
I'll say if he's healthy, I think he's going tomorrow against Toronto.
Yeah, probably, JR. I don't have a whole lot of patience for this right now. Like I said, a guy that practiced a couple of days ago, and I'm also careful. I have no idea what's wrong with him. Didn't dress last night, so he's taking some time off. You're not ready to play the home opener. The other guy stands on his head. And for Matt Murray last year, a lot of roller coaster there of, you know, injuries to inconsistency. He's a key part of your franchise right now. I'll be honest with you. I liked his preseason, but it wasn't off the charts. Forsberg, for the way he performed last night, is some of the best goaltending. And from the time Forsberg's arrived, to me, he's actually been the better goaltender. So, like I said, I'm just not chancing it. And I also think for Matt Murray, much like Alan that we talk about in Montreal, everything you go back to in Pittsburgh, people said when he was challenged by Marc-Andre Fleury, I'm not pretending Forsberg or anybody's Fleury, but it creates a different dynamic for a goaltender. And I don't think it would be anything bad to start challenging him right now. And it's nothing personal, but just, hey, if you could really create a healthy goaltender battle right now, I think that would bring out the best in Matt Murray.
Well, and as you've said, and I think it's a great point, and you know the inside of a goalie's head like a lot of us don't. Some guys just perform better when someone is challenging them for their job. Yeah. We saw the best of Matt Murray was when Marc-Andre Fleury was in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And when Marc-Andre Fleury left, all of a sudden Matt Murray's game seemed to go with it. And so maybe, and who knows if last night is a bit of a flash in the pan for Forsberg. You know, he has been, if we're being honest with ourselves, he has been at best, backup goaltender quality National Hockey Leaguer. But he had a great game last night, and maybe he's fine. Maybe he's one of those guys that is, you know, he's rolling into his, however old he is, late 20s. He's finding his game and is becoming a competent NHL goaltender. But whatever it is, If competition raises the level of both guys, then go at it.
And that's exactly, because it was funny back in the day, the greatest or one of the greatest goaltenders of all time, Patrick Roy, did not want anybody as a backup that was a threat to him. He wanted somebody that was a buddy and almost would kiss his butt. That's why my buddy Craig Billington made so much money for a long time in Colorado. Think about that, JR, right? You would think Patrick Roy. That was just the way he operated. Now, a positive of that is it's his net, it's his team. But yeah, for Matt Murray, like I said, I've had this vibe since he's come. But I also, the other part, I think from the sample size of Forsberg when he came over, Jared, and as you point out, it is weird. It's only his 57th game, but he's only 28 years old. And I'm not going to pretend, because every time this comes up, it's like, oh, Craig Anderson at 28 figured it out. I'm not saying that. But I have been pleasantly surprised, and I'm not just talking about being structurally sound. He made athletic plays yesterday going side to side that were outstanding. Do you know what I mean? This wasn't just a, if the puck hits me, we're good to go here. He went another level athletically, which I'm kind of intrigued about.
What's interesting to me is I watched him play the game last night. I found him to be, for the most part, a calm goalie in the net.
Well, incredibly efficient, square all the time. And so, didn't get tired is what I loved in the third period.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, Philip Gustafson kind of plays that same way, and I think about it. Is that the way they teach how to play goal in Sweden? Like, is everybody kind of coming from the same, or most of them coming, you know, the same handbook as they're growing up and being taught the position?
Yeah, it's a great point, Jerry. I would say it's almost European goaltenders now, right? When you think about the Russians, the Finns, to the Swedes, I think it lends itself to the Swedish mentality, I guess, if you were getting at that, right?
Like a Volvo.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Never too high, never too low. You know, certainly good on gas.
That's going to be his nickname from me. Let's see if it sticks. Forsberg is now Volvo.
Yeah.
With me?
Yeah, I think they sold it, didn't they? The Swedish company.
Doesn't
they
matter.
Sold out.
It's all about symbolically.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I'm thinking about an efficient Swedish vehicle. I'm going, and they're super expensive. Yeah. I'm going. Anton Forsberg is Volvo.
I like it. And do you feel like Murray early on has kind of been IKEA? Where, you know,
he's not Swedish, so that no,
I know.
Really fit.
Okay.
He's from Thunder Bay,
okay.
So I'm going more. I'm thinking of lumber. Leave it with me.
Okay,
leave it with me on that one.
Are we going back to paneling, or are we going to a nice pressure board?
So this on Forsberg, this is interesting, and I'm all about projecting ahead.
Yeah,
and I think we both agree in it, and you know, in a perfect world, the Sens challenge all year for a playoff spot and play meaningful games into, and the season goes till the end of April, so they play meaningful games into April. I think that's a perfect scenario. I think you and I both agree. I think they're a sixth place team in the division. I think that's reasonable. And again, as long as the younger core gets better and better, next year will be the year in which expectations will rise. But regardless, I wonder if Anton Forsberg, if he has a good year this year, plays himself into a spot where a team loses a key goalie, or a team like Toronto, right? They were desperate at the end of last year to make sure they had themselves covered in net. I just wonder if Anton Forsberg plays himself into where he could be a very valuable commodity, and the Sens could net something at the trade deadline in return that would be far exceeding what you would think for a backup goalie making $800K.
Yeah, you never know. Situational, JR, also what you want to do.
I'm doing that after one game.
Oh, exactly. But no, I thought when he was here last year, this is when they started to stabilize the goaltending, was he came in, Murray was hurt, Decord arrived, and Gustafson came in. The part you want to do if you're him right now, Forsberg, okay, it's great to be bounced around on waivers, but what you want to slide into in the cap error is that goaltender that's around $1 million as a backup. If you can do better, that's great. We saw Driedger. I don't feel the upside that way, but if you can slide into, we're in the cap era, they know you're a real capable backup goaltender, and for the next 5-7 years, you know, look at McElhenney, what, at a 13-year career? You know, that's what your goal would be right now. Want to get a bit of stability maybe this summer? Like I said, somebody up against a cap that wants a real capable backup goaltender, there'd be some value in that.
And for Anton Forsberg, I don't want to say that he's fighting for his, you know, his NHL career, but there's pressure on him. He's year-by-year guy, right? Every year he's one-year contract. He's making near the league minimum. If he can put, you know, if this is enough, this, you know, this window with Ottawa this year where he can maybe battle Matt Murray and maybe get half of the starts or 40% of the starts, and he can put something good on his goalie resume, as it were, because I think Ottawa, all things being equal, is probably moving. They're letting him go at the end of this season if they're not trading him, because Gustafson is a one-way deal next year.
I think the what they foresee is Murray and Gustafson is the goalie tandem next year. Forsberg needs to put something on his resume to get a job somewhere else. And so he's got a lot on the line, too.
Yeah, and I don't mind it. And like I said, I'm not sold on Matt Murray. I really have. And again, a little bit of I like the preseason. Bit of a red flag not being ready open tonight. But hey, you know what? If you're sick, you're sick, JR. But I think the healthy competition, JR, is your best attack. And let's face some facts here. You know what? Defensively, this isn't a real strong team. You got a lot of young kids playing up front that aren't going to be as strong. And quite simply, hey, you're a defenseman or two away from really stabilizing the point. Hey, there are going to be a lot of nights. They're going to get a lot of chances. And having a good tandem, they're really going to have to play Forsberg on most nights for them to be competitive. And that's nothing wrong with that. But that's if you want to honestly analyze where this team is at, hey, that's a simple reality.
Scott texts at 12-1200. Good morning. Exciting day yesterday. Yep. Thought we were fortunate to win, though. Defensively, gave up far too many scoring chances. We aren't going to win many games, allowing close to 50 shots. How do we improve? Writes Scott.
Well, Scott, I'll be honest. If you were the management team, and this is part of, and I don't want to rehash, but the glaring error of what's not happening right now, JR, is unfortunately the defenseman that came over in the Stone trade, unfortunately on Delzato and some other things there. I mean, you're a real, real capable top four defenseman away from stabilizing your back end. Well, how is that going to come? Well, it's going to come via Jake Sanderson and other things within the system. Those players obviously are not readily available. You look at the sum of the parts for where they're at right now and the reliance probably on Zubin Shabbat as you move along. It's just a lot to overcome right now. There's isn't enough talent on the back end. It's that simple.
What do you make of them? And I don't know if this was a paper transaction or whether this is for the foreseeable future, but Eric Brännström was sent down to Belleville yesterday. Whether that is going to be, hey, go play some games, even if it's just for, and I haven't looked, I'm presuming that Belleville is playing some games this weekend, and he'll be back up, or maybe this is a, hey, until we get an injury or you play out of your mind, you're going to be down in Belleville. But what'd you make of that?
Well, simple transaction yesterday, JR, would be, I don't care who's running what business. If you're explaining to me that this guy's going to sit and eat hot dogs on a one-way salary on a two-way contract, you know what I mean? Like, from an economic standpoint, there's no sense to have him if you're not going to dress him. Now, rumor of yesterday was, they're going to play Delzato to run the power play. I'm like, please don't do that. It's Brännström. Credit to them. They ended up going the 12-6, and they sent him down. But it is as simple as that. He's on a two-way contract. If you're not playing, no reason for you to be here. I'm not going to pay your one-way freight.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting. I'd love to be kind of inside Eric Brännström's head right now, because I wonder if you can look at a lot of a good defensemen around the NHL that are now into their late 20s, early 30s. And I was surprised, and I don't remember of who I looked up the other day, and I was like, that guy spent that. Oh, you know who it was? It was Ryan Pulock. The guy that just signed the monster deal with the Islanders, who Pierre McGuire, right, would rave about him and who's the other guy in the island that he plays with all the time? Best defensive pairing in the NHL, he called him. Anyway, Pulock signs this monster deal. And I kind of looked him up because I wanted to get some background on him. You know, came out of the Western League. He played 3 full years in the minors before he came up to Ottawa. He's not, or into the island, and now he's played 4 years with the Islanders, and now he's making $6 or $7 million a year. And he's seen by many to be a really – I've heard mention that he could be on the Canadian Olympic team. My point being, and I'm not saying that Eric Brännström is going to develop into Ryan Pulock. What I'm saying is defensemen in particular can take a long time. And Eric Brännström seems to be this guy from when they, and he is a creature of our perception based on the trade still. And I think that's going to dog him for all his time here in Ottawa. Unfortunately, he is the piece that he got back from Mark Stone. Yeah. And that is what all of us have been unable to wrap our heads around, is that right now that is seen as not a very good trade for Ottawa at all. Yeah. They didn't get much back. We'll see what, you know, Sokolov was the draft pick that they took from that. But Brännström has just not worked out. And I think for his entire time here in Ottawa, and I just wonder, and I'm not sure I'm at the stage now where, hey, it's time to move on from him for his good, for the good of the organization, move on from him. But I'm just kind of wondering what the play is here with Eric Brännström and the organization.
Yeah, and I again, based on training camp, other things, and sitting out Delzato was an obvious, but coach has an affinity for Josh Brown. He brought him in, JR, so this is a bit of a coaching thing as well. Another one is Mackenzie Weegar, you know, when you look at this. But what the tendency would be, JR, is that generally the highly skilled smaller player is not the one doing that. Do you know what I mean? It's the bigger body came in.
You mean marinating?
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. And, you know, you weren't highly touted, but you figured it out, first of all, from a teaching standpoint. I'd use Holden as an example, and I don't know how long he was in the minors, but you come along and then something plops where you realize, wow, I'm a big body. I've been taught properly how to play. I physically figured it out not to run all over the place. You settle in. I think with Eric, well, I don't think, I've said this about Eric Branstrom from day one. He takes too much contact. He does not have very good defensive feet for a 5'9 defenseman. And I don't think those things are ever going to improve, JR. That's an issue I would have. I'm not saying a guy doesn't improve. I'm not saying you don't get better with experience, but I don't necessarily think that the upside is there. That's my projection on him. That's been since he arrived.
Yeah. He is now starting his fourth season in the organization. Exactly. Like, it's amazing how, you know, the year they got him, he was playing in with Vegas's farm team in Chicago, right?
So he's a 19-year-old.
Yeah. So he is now starting the season, perhaps, it looks like, in Belleville. It'll be a fifth season for him in the minors. I'm just kind of, again, as I said, I'd love to be inside his brain to kind of be figuring out, you know, is he feeling like, the wounded dog, like, nobody loves me. Is he feeling like, oh yeah, I'll show you? Yeah. I'd be interested to sit down with him if he ever, and for him to be real honest about where he's feeling, like where he's at.
And I'd want to be motivated, JR, but I'd have no problem if he was feeling a little bit down, or, hey, you know what? Sometimes a coach doesn't like the way you play, because he played with Zub down the stretch last year. When I watched yesterday's game, and we talked about this a little bit, I'm not expecting to run and gun with the Leafs, but there is no way, if you're going to run into a lockdown situation and dress big bodies on the back end, end up in your zone. And we watch Zaitsev now away from Shabbat. It is not pretty at times with Mete. I really believe at the end of the day that Holden with Branstrom is your best chance later in games, or especially in a second period, to advance the puck. People say, well, you know what, he's not big, he's not great defensively. Well, you got to kind of pick your poison, because you are going to end up in a spot like they did last night where there's just not enough foot speed. And I do think there's enough transitional speed up front. That would be the tactic I'd take. I'm giving up a little bit, but at some point I got to try to leave my own zone. And I'm not sure that, I think the forward group has some of that philosophy, but I don't think the makeup of the back end is matching up to the style that the coach wants to play.
There is an affinity for Nikita Zaitsev. I mean, they named him an assistant captain yesterday. He's not going anywhere. The coach loves him. The general manager speaks of loving the player. I know that you're not a fan. I know that he is certainly prone to turnovers with the puck on his stick. He's a hard worker. But I don't think he's going anywhere. He's not going outside the top four.
And to say I'm not a fan here, I'm a fan of if he's used properly. And I just don't, hey, when you're going to put out information about this is one of the best shutdown defensemen in the league and the coach is going to throw out stats, just leave that alone. We know what he is. He's a hard worker. He's a good fella. Let him go out and do his thing. But let's not pretend that we're talking about one of the elite players or anybody in the National Hockey League is fearful of playing against Nikita Zaitsev.
Yeah. So if you had, of the eight guys, and we'll include Branstrom back in this list, and again, there's only one regular season game in the books, who is the best, in your opinion, the best second pairing? Who should be the 3-4 defensemen on this team?
Yeah, it's a real good question, actually. I would lean towards Holden and Branstrom.
Really?
But, yeah, well, I just don't. I have not seen so far. I'd probably go Mete Zaitsev, JR. We kind of said, hey, that's something to try.
Because you just kind of went through everything that you don't like about Branstrom, and yet you're saying with this group of eight, he's still the third or fourth best defenseman.
Well, based on the mix and what Holden provides for him, if you ask me on a game tonight what my second pairing would be that. Now, I'm also saying, because Zaitsev and Mete, to me, have been under pressure a lot. Now, they're playing a lot of minutes. The key here, though, is I wouldn't have Brown or Delzato involved. I really like the feel of Holden and Branstrom. And, hey, I'm pointing out every player, even Thomas Chabot, has deficiencies. What I'm pointing out on Branstrom, I also recognize there's other things he can do. And I think if supported properly by Holden, that would be, and whether it's second or third pairing, to me, that would clearly be the best mix. And, hey, Josh Brown, I think, has improved a tad, but you just end up in too much of the same old thing. And at the end of the day, you know, there's not enough skill and not enough mobility there to realistically be an everyday NHL player.
Yeah. Yeah. Going to be interesting to see. And again, don't want to read too much into one game. And again, the Leafs, even without Austin Matthews, they can get you running around in your own end last night or in any game. We saw that last night with Ottawa. The defensive deficiencies on this team were evident again last night, despite the win.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Thoughts on what you saw last night? Would you project not only for the weekend, but ahead for the Sens based on what you saw? And we'll get more into the Tkachuk discussion as well. Still tons of feedback coming in on Brady signing yesterday with the Sens. Looks like at this point he's going to practice today. He's not going to play tomorrow, but maybe Sunday. Sunday or next Thursday. And that's a home game, two home games. So Dallas here Sunday, San Jose here next Thursday. I think you'd circle one of those two dates, and I think maybe they might make the determination as soon as they see him at practice today, kind of find out where his game's at. He says, Brady Tkachuk said when he was on with the boys last night from the game, Brady, saying he skated hard when he was with the U.S. development team. So, and he certainly looked like he was in good shape.
Oh, we got to get hard T-shirts for the set. Hey?
We got to be triceps, biceps, arceps, hard.
Hard.
Even Pooley's going hard now. Hey? It's transferred right over. But you know what? And again, JR, credit too. Like I said, the real transitional point would have been basically the last 6 weeks as everybody goes on to training camp. The Blues kick you off the ice. You could have sat home and said, oh, I'll be fit. I'll skate with my dad, or I'll skate with some buddies and I'll be in the gym. I'm okay, not dad, but anyway.
I was just picturing that.
Okay. Wonder if he'd have to be able to get the bucket on his head. You get out there and skate with him and Holly, eh?
Oh my God.
you're out with the Blues alumni.
I would pay to watch Keith Tkachuk raise Brad Hull once around the rink at this stage.
Oh, yeah. No, and so to the point, the fact that he traveled up and it was as close to you could come to skating somewhere, right, to try to get yourself ready.
Yeah.
You know, credit to him for doing that.
Yeah. All right, Sens back on the practice ice today in Toronto tomorrow, Dallas here on Sunday. That's the weekend ahead for the Sens. We'll get some of your wrenches coming up. In the next segment, we'll talk a little bit. We don't need to spend a lot of time on the Thursday night football game last night. The Buccaneers beat the Eagles. We knew that was going to happen. We know, spend no time on that, really. Tom Brady, ho-hum. Another win. So we'll get into the baseball playoffs as well. We're set now for the championship series. Dodgers beat the Giants. And a very, somewhat, we'll say, controversial end to the Giants-Dodgers game last night. We'll revisit that with you as well. And much more as we roll on here for a Friday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. That's when you know the weekend is here, when the boys on TSN 1200 play the Friday song, which normally we would actually play earlier in the morning, but again, Hammer will claim he was out late last night at the game.
No.
Forgot about it.
We went into old Butchie. Can I call him Butchie Simmer?
Absolutely.
And I didn't know if it would be appropriate to go into the Friday song with Coach Cassidy. We went to shipping up to Boston instead, and yeah, I thought that was a little more fitting.
Which is fine. We could also play the Friday song at 7:40 or at 6:40. We got a lot of people. They're not, as much as we admire the people that listen for the whole 4 hours and appreciate you, a lot of people that are in the car for 20 minutes, then they got to get into their job, and the old boss man doesn't allow them to listen to the radio machine. Yeah. They get a short little sample size. They need to hear the Good Friday stuff.
And not only that, they got a bottle of Jameson right on the car seat next to them. They're just waiting they're waiting for the signal to open her up and start pinting.
Once they get to where they're at, huh?
That's true.
All right. Let's see. Let's get some more texts at 12. No, let's get to Brady. I want to hear Brady Tkachuk, actually, before we get to more texts and more wrenches. Brady Tkachuk spoke yesterday after he arrived in Ottawa. So, again, signed the deal in the morning, flew from Detroit because he was at the U.S. development camp in Michigan, flew from Detroit to Montreal, and then drove from Montreal to Ottawa, arrived during the second period, sat in with Dean and Gord for a bit. But here was Brady Tkachuk on letting his family know yesterday morning that he finally had a deal.
We were on the call, and I think mid-call, once I heard it was agreed upon, I just texted my family group chat. It's all she wrote, so... you know what, it was my sister was probably the most excited. She was in class and she was saying she couldn't even contain her excitement. She was going nuts in class. So I think, you know, my mom was crying right away, so I called her after, and she was crying. So it was definitely, you know, some great calls, and called my grandparents after, and they're all pumped.
I wonder if in the family text chain, whether there's a little message there to Matthew that's like 57-21.
Yeah.
Hey, I got 57 mil schmil. Yeah. You got 21, pal. Now, I know you got a new contract coming up at the end of next year. Maybe you'll pass that, but 57-21, family scoreboard.
Yeah, a normal group chat, multimillionaire kids and parents. And hey,
I'm just trying to imagine that, too. Eh? Oh, by the way, I just signed for $58 million.
And the sister's probably like, hey, waiting for that field hockey contract to come through. I'm just as good an athlete as you guys. Yeah. It is the beautiful part of, obviously, don't know the parents, but the raising of the Tkachuks and Mrs. Oster, who's the mom, the humble beginnings, I guess, of him coming from Winnipeg, playing in the NHL, an extremely wealthy man, and for two children to just absolutely, and I'll say Wayne Gretzky, anybody else, like just love hockey, love playing hockey. And that was resonant, you know, last night when he's getting interviewed and he's watching the play, JR. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more, and I don't think this is going to have any effect on him whatsoever that he's signed a huge contract. It's only going to be more of a buy-in, and as a captain of the team, is going to make everybody else that much more accountable.
Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today, which we're going to put up online at tsn1200.ca. We're asking you about, and I put this question to Dave Poulin, which is, what is, if you project ahead, whatever year this may be, doesn't matter the year, what is Brady Tkachuk's best goal-scoring year going to be with the Ottawa Senators? Is it going to be 20-plus goals, so between 20 and 29? 30-plus goals, so 30 to 39, 40-plus, 40 to 49, or is he able to match the old man? Different time and place, but the old man hit for 50 goals a couple of times. So can Brady Tkachuk hit for 50 goals? What do you think Brady Tkachuk will max out at in his best season? And we all know it's not all about goals and points, with it's intangibles, etc. But just let's just talk about goals here. What do you think his best goal-scoring season will be? So I'm probably thinking that most people will go to the creamy middle. I'm guessing where that's where our friend Simmer will go. But Simmer, what do you think? What will his best goal scoring? Give me an exact number of what you think his best goal scoring year will be.
I'll say 35. You know what? I'm careful even to go to 30 on players when this is thrown out with Cole Caulfield. Ottawa Senators have not had a 30 goal score in the last 10 years. Getting to 30 puts you in pretty elite company. Getting to 40, I mean, you're, like I said, that's a superstar. I'm going to go 35 right now until I see a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
If you can't score from the tops of the circles, JR, off the rush, I know you can play a power game and do a lot, but the natural goal scorer comes off the wing and lets it rip. And you know what I mean? Every time he's on the ice, and not that he's not going to play hard all the time, but he's going to have to get better off that. That's what I was trying to ask Pooley, if he really wants to go to that next level, because that's what his dad was. His dad was a consummate power forward, had some real high-end straight-ahead speed, and was just basically a bulldozer coming off of that. And Brady may grow into that, but we haven't quite seen that yet.
No, I would say at this point, you could probably count on the fingers of one hand, and he has scored in the area of, what, about 60 goals in his time with the Sens? I think it's 60 dead on.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? How many of those have been scored from outside of 5 feet in front of the net? It's probably less than the fingers on one hand, right? And listen, there's Gray Cray. He goes to the dirty areas, and he's going to score his fair share of goals from there. But I think if we're being fair, right now, he doesn't have the ability to shoot to score from the tops of the circles, I think is what you're saying.
No,
right now.
And even developing a one-timer. And then the other thing I'll say, too, I don't know that always his, and I don't know if he was fascinated with the shots on goal and the hits. I think there are a fair amount of wasted shots as well, JR. He shot some from some angles that, you know, again,
no chancers.
Yeah, that I think he can be a little bit smarter about where he's putting the puck and, you know, how he'd kind of handle that going forward.
Yeah. All right, so thoughts on that. We'll get that up on our website at tsn1200.ca. What will, in Brady Tkachuk's best season, be the most amount of goals that he is going to score? Let us know what you think at tsn1200.ca. All right, let's get to a couple of other things. Some text. Could we not attempt to move Murray after this year and sign Forsberg? Then we run with Gus and Forsberg. Thoughts? It's amazing. One game. The people are coming around. But regardless, I'll say this on Matt Murray. This is my opinion. He's got, at the end of this year, still two more years. He'll be owed at that point $15 million, I believe it is, right? If he has another year this year like last year, he's essentially untradeable.
He's got a no trade, which is his contract, JR.
Right. And but even if he said, I want to be traded, who's taking on that? It's two things, right? If he has a really good year this year, you're keeping him because he is what you thought he was when you signed him in the first place. Yeah. If he's really bad, nobody's going to want to take on the contract.
No, and, you know, the part of that, you get this year, and then you get two more years, and if you have to transition with Gus Sabus on whatever contract, and a decent one of that, it'll time up with the end of his deal, JR. But, like I said, yeah, that's, say, 6, 7, and 8. Yeah, again, same as last year. You paid a little less in a COVID year at 4. Now, all of a sudden, 2 years from now, or this year, hey, you need this guy to be one of the top 15 goaltenders in the National Hockey. That's what he's being paid for. That's what he won 2 Stanley Cups on, and that's why I don't have a lot of patience for it, Jay. I really appreciated last year, transition, and all the things that were going on. I just don't have much time. Now, as I said, very respectful if somebody's sick, can't play, but as far as handling it, man, if I'm knowing the goaltending and knowing my feel for it, I'm creating competition right off the hop here. I'm not worrying about who should start. Hey, that guy just basically stood on his head last night. He's my starter for Saturday night. No questions asked.
Dave writes, a lot of these defensemen are not helped at all by the young forward group who lose a lot of puck battles in the defensive zone. That comes from Dave.
You know, Dave, it's a great point. You know, and as I said, it really does. And you see some situations there. Batherson coming off of his offside, trying to make a soft backhand. Timmy Stützle, you know, hey, you recognize with the Toronto Maple Leafs, Jared, as you break down individuals, whatever you may think of Nylander, he went up against Zub a couple of times down low and took Zub off the puck. They are a strong, mature hockey team, and you're absolutely right. There are some areas there that Ottawa is going to struggle with, and mix in a larger defense, there's going to be some tough spots. Even more reason why you need some real, real good goaltending.
From unsigned, I feel like you boys are going to get a kick out of this. I had the over on Peter Mrazek's saves last night. It was over 23.5. He got hurt making his 23rd save and left the game. I got robbed. To which I will say to unsigned, that's why the buildings in Las Vegas are as big as they are.
Yeah, but wow. And even the way old Mrazek went down, not a great start. You know, again, I wouldn't say the best goals in the world, but when you get to the second period there, he took the high hard one off of somebody.
Yep.
And, you know, was it, which he reacted very slowly, but as a goaltender, you have a pretty good feel for where the puck is at. But that one there was your classic goaltender of, oh, Matt, popped the groin here, and I'm in some trouble. And, boy, Campbell went in as well. And I was kind of wondering if they'd end up going to him in the second period, JR. But, boy, you watch him when he hops in the net, that contrast of, and I don't mind Mrazek, but when Campbell hops in right now, gosh, is he big? Is he efficient, confident? And I've been really impressed the way he's evolved. And there's another guy. And again, I'm not going to go on every single goaltender's Craig Anderson, but think of the journey this fella's been on and how good the sample size has been so far in Toronto.
Okay, we should have kept Bruce Cassidy on for another hour, and we could have talked to him about this. Bob McKenzie reporting, Boston Bruins, Charlie McAvoy had been rumored they were closing in on a long-term big-money deal. Apparently it's done. 8 years, AAV. Patrice Bergeron, you're no longer the highest-paid Boston Bruin. $9.5 million a year for Charlie McAvoy, which is significant dollars for Charlie McAvoy. Like, he is... I'll let you comment on what you think of Charlie McAvoy, but the numbers per se for a defenseman have not necessarily said to you that he should be. That would put him pretty much right in the top 2 or 3 paid defensemen in the National Hockey League, would it not?
Yeah. It's interesting, JR, because also you get into a bit of an argument. If you're his agent, we are caught up quite a bit in the flash of Heskin and Makar Hughes, a little bit of Thomas Chabot.
Yeah.
But if you go back to kind of that traditional team that Canada had in 2014, I would I'm not going to argue. I mean, to me, if you said one game tonight, who would I take out of those 4 or 5 guys? I would take Charlie McAvoy. Now, the question is he dynamic enough to match up with the money? But to me, he is clearly the best all-around defenseman of the group. Mm-hmm. But based on his numbers, I agree with you. I guess Bergie's voice in the dressing room about guys taking less. Like I said, that's a delicate slope. And when Pooley brought that up, here's what happened in Boston. This goes back to Bobby Orr, and then it was Ray Bourque. And it was a bit of a, you know, guys felt like Ray Bourque was kind of your modern-day Gordie Howe, right? He's taking less. It holds everybody down. Then Mike O'Connell came in, and they had a whole wave of players from Anson Carter to Jason Allison. We're all like, whatever, man. I'm moving on. Then this next era brought it. It's just really delicate. You can, as a management group, but as players, like I said, that's the player's own thing. It's his money. It's his, you know, this idea of buying in and taking a whole bunch less to be in a good program. It's really, really hard to do that at the end of the day.
Charlie McAvoy's played 4 years in Boston. And again, Salary is often dictated a lot by points, even among defensemen. 32 points, 26, or 28 points, 32 points, and last year 30 points. Now, in none of these years did he pull a, for various reasons, play a full 82-game schedule. So prorated, he'd be in and around 40 points. And, you know, he's going to be getting a little bit better. He's adding more responsibility each year. So I think if you said Charlie McAvoy 40 to 50 points is realistic, and then you talk about, you know, that he's a good all-round defenseman at $9.5 million, maybe that makes a little more sense now.
Yeah, and you also have a guy, JR's turning 24 this year, so a tad older than the other fellas, so you're getting into buying more unrestricted years on a guy like McAvoy. And also, I know he plays on a very good team, but we're talking about plus 20, plus 14, plus 24, plus 22, and the numbers would go up. And as I said, I think it'll be fun if you want to measure him, what he looks like come Olympics on best versus best and how he's used. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because I even go back to a guy like Petrangelo or some other players that team that Canada had, it wasn't necessarily flashy, but they could all play properly. And if you needed something offensively, but hey, they lean on him a lot in Boston. Mm-hmm. And so we'll certainly get a better indicator this year.
It'll be interesting to see as Thomas Chabot's role and what they hope will be his development continues and the team gets better around him, what Thomas Chabot will become. Because right now, his $8 million a year salary, we had quite a few defensemen here this summer who have bypassed that number, right? Haskinen, 8-4. Now, Quinn Hughes was 7-8, but Makar went to 9. Seth Jones was 9.5, right, I want to say? And McAvoy is now 9.5, so we've had a bunch of young defensemen that have signed contracts, most of them for more than what Chabot has made or is making and is going to make on his contract. So, I, you know, Thomas Chabot, I think we can all agree, room for improvement. You can see how it's all there potentially, but there's still another level he needs to get to.
Very much so. And hey, I'll pay for the talent in a sense of I'll take the upside. The real question, JR, whether it be by body and kind of experience, fast forward to a playoff. Is he capable of playing north of 25 minutes and playing a very effective, not high-risk role, running a power play, but at the same time being a lock-it-down defenseman? Ultimately, that's what the Hedmans and anybody else, Carlson or anyone that's won a Stanley Cup, ultimately has to give you.
Yeah.
Go back to Doughty, same thing, Duncan Keith.
Right? There's another guy named Jake Sanderson who's coming right down the chute here pretty soon who could maybe take on some of the responsibility in the role that you just described for Chabot.
Big time.
All right, on that note, we'll take our leave. And thank you very much for all the feedback, both today and all this week. It's been fantastic. As always, great to have hockey back. Brady Tkachuk is signed, so we are no longer officially Tkachuk 1200. We are now officially, going forward, TSN 1200. All right? The fun and frivolity continues for the next 4 hours with Steve Lloyd, Graham Creech, and Steve Bunda on